Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Monday, the 15th of April in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, Israel grapples with how to respond to Iran after the weekend's unprecedented missile and drone attack, as world leaders urge restraint.
Oil prices hold steady on speculation that the conflict can be contained, but gold continues to rise.
And in other news, Apple's iPhone shipments drop by 10% as sales of Android rivals rise.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories. A global diplomatic effort is underway to try to avoid a full-blown regional war in the Middle East. Iran fired more than 300 drones and missiles against Israel on Saturday evening. Almost all were intercepted before they reached Israeli airspace, and there were no fatalities reported. Israel's president, Itzhak Herzog, says his country is still considering its response, but there will be one.
This is a declaration of war, not because we are restrained and because we know the repercussions and because we have deliberations with our partners, we are considering all options. We are not war seekers.
Herzog's comments came as Tehran sought to draw a line under the attack, which it says was retaliation for the strike on its diplomatic compound in Damascus earlier this month. It said that there would be no further attacks as long as Israel didn't respond aggressively. At an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on all sides to de-escalate tensions.
The Middle East is on the brink. The people of the region are confronting a real danger of a devastating full-scale conflict. Now is the time to defuse and de-escalate. Now is the time for maximum restraint.
Guterres's call was echoed by G7 leaders in a statement. They condemned what they described as Iran's direct and unprecedented attack against Israel and said that they will now work to stabilize the situation and avoid further escalation.
The United States has ruled out involvement in any retaliation against Iran for the missile and drone attack. However, there is now growing political momentum in Washington to provide Israel with significant additional military aid. Speaking to Fox News, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson said he expects there will be a vote this week.
The House Republicans and the Republican Party understand the necessity of standing with Israel. We are going to try again this week, and the details of that package are being put together right now. We're looking at the options and all these supplemental issues.
In that interview with Fox News, Johnson also indicated that funds for Ukraine could be part of the package. Earlier this year, the Senate passed a $95 billion package that included support for both Israel and Ukraine.
The reaction on oil markets to the weekend's events has so far been muted, with many analysts seeing the conflict as remaining contained for now. But an escalation could push prices past $100 a barrel. Aaron David Miller, who is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, sums up the consensus view.
We're going to get through this without what I would describe to you as a major regional war, something the Middle East has never seen before, something that would create spiking oil prices, plunging financial markets, and a degree of instability across the region.
Miller also highlights the risks of a wider conflict as the Middle East produces about a third of the world's crude oil. Brent crude is already up almost 20% this year as OPEC Plus has tightened supply. There are also fears of disruption to the key shipping route through the Red Sea after Iran seized a container vessel travelling through the Strait of Hormuz on Saturday.
To other news, the iPhone is falling behind its Android rivals in the race for the global smartphone market. That's despite the sector recording some of its best growth in years. Bloomberg's Tima Adebayo has the details.
The worldwide mobile market is rebounding, enjoying its best growth in years. That will be little consolation to Apple, though, after it saw iPhone shipments fall by 10% in the first 3 months of the year. It's a drop that puts the company behind analyst expectations by more than a million units. Muted sales in China after a ban on foreign devices could be behind the decline, which saw Apple outpaced by rival Samsung. As home to the company's biggest retail network outside the US, Apple will need to do more to recapture its Chinese fans. In London, Tiwa Adebayo, Bloomberg Radio.
Aluminium and nickel are spiking on the London Metal Exchange after sanctions against Russia. The US and UK imposed a ban on deliveries of any Russian supplies after midnight last Friday in a bid to inhibit the funding for Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine. Aluminium jumped as much as 9.4% and nickel was not far behind, suggesting that traders are bracing for major disruption. Russian metal accounted for 91% of LME stockpiles at the end of March. The escalation of hostilities in the Middle East could also stoke volatility across the sector.
Germany's Olaf Scholz has arrived in China with a difficult message: act soon or face EU tariffs. Europe's increasingly wary of China's use of massive public support in critical sectors and has been toughening its stance in recent months. Our chief North Asia correspondent Stephen Engel explains how that puts Germany in a tough position as China's largest global trading partner.
He has to listen to the concerns of the German businesses. Two out of three in a German Chamber of Commerce of China survey saying, look, they're facing unfair competition in the China market. So there are these concerns. And this is at a time as well where other EU leaders are discussing and really threatening the potential for tariffs on EVs and the like. So he's going to have to really walk a very, tricky balancing act.
Engel notes that a few weeks after Scholz's visit, France's Emmanuel Macron is also set to travel to Beijing.
And those are our top stories. In terms of the markets this morning, stock futures for Europe are actually higher, up 0.4% for the Euro Stoxx 50 futures. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index is down by 0.8%. And 10-year US Treasury yields this morning trading at 4.56%, up by 4 basis points.
There's coverage across Bloomberg this morning of the continued reaction to the weekend's attack on Israel. There is a live blog. TLIV is the function on the terminal. It's also on the Bloomberg website as well, looking at all of the various aspects of this story. Just one piece I've noted out from one of our reporters in Iran, Arslan Shala, reporting this morning that Iran has lifted a suspension on domestic and international flights from its capital early this morning. It had imposed restrictions on flights in the airspace over the weekend due to fears of an Israeli reprisal for the missile drone barrage. Of course, there has been significant disruption to flight paths since the weekend events as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, this is the first direct attack by Iran against Israel ever. And so we should dive into what the Israeli response to the attack over the weekend from Tehran might be. The UN Security Council met on Sunday in New York, where the US said that it would explore ways to hold Iran accountable for its actions at the UN. Bloomberg's Israel Bureau Chief Ethan Bronner joins us now from Tel Aviv. Good morning, Ethan.
Morning.
Israel's defences held up against the barrage on Saturday night by Iran. How are we expecting Israel to respond to this?
Well, it's, as you can imagine, still under a very intense debate. There was a three-hour war cabinet meeting last night that ended inconclusively, as far as we can tell. I think that probably we will not see, and Iran seems to understand that by having opened its airspace, we will not see an immediate major response. And Israel, by the way, announced that it's opening its schools this morning after having closed them yesterday out of fear. So it's clear that the American desire for the Israelis not to jump is being listened to. I think the Israelis have felt the warm embrace of the United States again after many weeks of cold relations, and that's in playing a role. And I think also that they like the idea of being able to choose what to do next rather than jumping.
You mentioned some of the international pressure there on Israel, but how much domestic pressure is there on Prime Minister Netanyahu to act, to respond?
I think it's pretty limited. That kind of pressure is coming from the far right, which is not negligible in this country, but it is not the majority. I think that the fact that there was not any death here. There was a 7-year-old girl who's fighting for her life who was hit by shrapnel. But other than that, no casualties and no genuine damage to its military facilities that were attacked. That has given Israel a sense of accomplishment and relief and not a need for instantly responding. And then those other factors are playing a role, which is there's some fatigue and there's some desire to not alienate the United States. And I think the general idea that, you know, you pick your response, you don't jump, makes sense. And also trying to figure out what exactly this means. The fact that Iran has chosen for the first time in the 40-plus year history of the shadow war to act openly, I think, is requiring people to analyze what this means.
Hmm. There is, though, concern that even if it is slow, that tit for tat, the escalations are building potentially into a regional conflict. How much influence do you think the United States has to prevent further escalation and the fear of an out-and-out war in the Middle East?
Well, some, but I mean, those fears are legitimate and real. There's be ridiculous to say that they're not important. And, you know, many conflagrations occur because of people sort of backing into them rather than going in willingly. So I think it's a very legitimate concern. You know, one of the things about Saturday night is that 120 ballistic missiles came flying at Israel and they were able to stop them. But imagine if one had gotten through and killed people, we'd be having a very different conversation. So there's no question that this is a very, very volatile situation.
What does all of this mean, Ethan, for the war in Gaza? Israel, as you mentioned, had been attracting increased criticism for its conduct there before the events of this weekend.
I think that's a great question, and it's something we need to be watching very closely in the coming days. My instinct, without yet enough evidence, is that the hardliners here who are demanding gratification to go after Iran, they will be answered by being told that, well, Israel is not going to do that, but it's going to redouble its efforts in Gaza. Now, of course, by doing that, and there's this question of going into Rafah, they could alienate the United States again. But I'm guessing that they'll be able to cut a deal with the U.S., but we shall see. I think that is the big question. Two reserve divisions have been called up in the last 24 hours. One has to assume it's related to Gaza. But I think these decisions are just being made now. And I think that we should keep our eyes on Gaza. You're quite right.
Also, the border with Lebanon, Hezbollah in Lebanon. I mean, the attack by Iran was not followed up by other proxies in other on other borders into Israel. What do we know about the risk of escalation there and the situation with these other Iran-backed groups?
Well, I mean, there were... Right. So there were missiles that came into Israel on Saturday night from other parts of the Middle East, from Syria and Iraq and from Yemen. These are all militias that are proxies of Iran. But you're right that in terms of Hezbollah, there was some restraint there. But on the other hand, of course, that's the other big issue for Israel, is that it has 70 or 80,000 people who can't live in their homes in the north because of this sort of middle-level war going on between Israel and Hezbollah. And it's sort of, we need to go back to Gaza because Hezbollah claims that it's going to do what it has to do only after there is it'll negotiate only after there is a peace deal in Gaza, which does not seem imminent. So all of these pieces of a puzzle are related. And indeed, Hezbollah and northern Israel, southern Lebanon are another very volatile battleground, definitely.
Okay, Ethan Bronner, Israel Bureau Chief, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And of course, there's plenty to read on Bloomberg.com and on the terminal from Ethan and our colleagues in Israel, including that race to avert a full-blown war. Today's Big Take report from Bloomberg.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast.
It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Now, turning our attention to what the implications of this perilous situation might be for macroeconomics, for oil prices in particular, and inflation around the world. Many analysts are trying to understand this. Joining us now is our senior energy reporter, Stephen Stapczynski. Good morning, Stephen. Oil has been one of the strongest performers in commodities this year. The reaction, though, more muted now to Iran's attack. But what are the concerns for oil markets?
I mean, I think the real concern, you know, you've heard how how everyone is kind of trying to get Israel to have a restraint approach or response to the attack over the weekend. I think it's really the response from Israel's government to Iran will determine whether, this leads to a wider conflict. And that's what the oil market is looking at right now. They're really looking and closely watching risks of escalation. And right now, oil prices are pretty steady. They're quite a muted response for a historic strike on Israel because the market is essentially pricing that there won't be any larger escalation. Now, that nothing, of course, is set in stone, and it's very hard to predict what can happen from here. But analysts are essentially saying that the oil market is breathing a sigh of relief, especially on Friday. I think a lot of traders were exiting their short positions. They weren't sure what was going to happen. And the worst case scenario did not play out. But, of course, risk still exists in the Middle East, and the conflict is ongoing. So now it's sort of the ball is in Israel's court to see how the oil market will react.
What does this mean in terms of supply, Stephen?
So far, supply is, you know, unaffected. Iranian crude production has had a tumultuous decade. Of course, it's already been hit by U.S. sanctions, but their production has risen more than 20% over the last 2 years. They produce about 3.4 million barrels a day, which makes up about 3.3% of global supply, which is not nothing. And a lot of the oil still, because despite the sanctions, make its way into the market to China and other places. So the Iranian oil is still flowing. But if there is a larger conflict, then perhaps that's at risk.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.